Hey everybody, and welcome to the New Gamer Nation podcast. I am your host, Pilot, and today with me I have Slacker.
Hey, what's up?
And Jose.
How's it going?
So, hope everybody had a good week, and everybody got some gaming in. And let's start off, as we always do, with what we are playing. So, why don't you start us off, Slacker? What have you been up to?
Well, continuing what I've been doing, I've been playing a lot of God of War 2. I'm pretty deep into that. Where I'm at the battle, I think it's with Perseus, the guy that turns invisible and flings fireballs at you. So that's where I am there. Really enjoying it thus far. I feel like that they did it. You know, it was they did enough from God of War 1 where they changed enough where it's still pretty fresh.
Okay, so what else have you been up to?
Also, I've been playing some Uncharted. I'm kind of early in that one still. Right now I'm at the castle on top of the cliff. It's like when you first crash land after your plane crashes.
You're real early in that.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, it's pretty cool thus far. It sort of seems like, if I had to sum up Uncharted in one sentence, I would sort of, it's basically like they did, you know, all the, it's like Tomb Raider, but it does everything right. I mean, you know, Tomb Raider came out how many ever years ago? But, you know, I always was plagued by mechanical problems and, just a clunky camera, several other things. But, no, I mean, Uncharted just takes that, like, you know, everything is, handles well, you know, you got the great cover system. So, you know, really just an enjoyable play.
Okay. And, anything else, or is that it?
Well, lastly, I recently picked up a 3DS. And right now I'm playing Dragon Quest IV on it.
So what are your impressions on that?
It's basically for fans of the Dragon Quest series. It's mostly Dragon Quest IV with a new coat of paint, meaning they bumped up the graphics. They changed a couple names here and there. A lot of the battle sequences have different animations. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I would say that primarily though, it's just it's got some nostalgia value to it because I was a fan of the original, you know, Dragon Warrior 4. They just kind of made it more modern. It's not really anything like they didn't really change a lot of the core elements. It's just basically it looks a lot better.
So does it look like Dragon Quest 4 as you remember it?
Or oh, it's this... way better, way better.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean they just the original one was for the NES. So the graphics of the DS are way superior to the NES.
All right, so why don't we move over to you, Jose? What have you been up to?
I just finished up Infamous 2.
Completed the story?
Yeah, did both evil and good. Both were very... I kind of rushed through the good call just because I knew... I kind of had a feeling of where I was in the story and everything, so I was just like... going through the side missions whenever a new story popped up and then, or a new part of the story popped up and then, just kind of kept going through that. I think I finished the good part faster than I finished the evil part.
Oh, which did you find more enjoyable?
Oh, I kind of liked the good version a little bit more. The evil version, it just wrenched my heart when I hate at the end. When, I don't know if I could give away any spoilers here, but it's a pretty bad ending for one of the characters, I'll say that. Or actually, both of them kind of, like, both main guys have their own death in, at the end, but it was heart-wrenching with the evil Cole. Like, because I didn't want to do it. I was just like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm sorry. I was apologizing to the TV. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't want to do this.
So, did you get the platinum trophy on that?
Not yet. I'm just kind of going through some of the user-generated content, which I'm kind of enjoying. There's some good stuff out there. I'm looking for mostly, like, I'd say battles more than, like, puzzles or anything else. I just want to kind of show off my powers and blast away people.
Now, do you find the user generated content, do you find it's very good or is it very bad? Is it mixed? What are your impressions of it?
I think there's some of the stuff that's mixed. A lot of the who's the developer, Sucker Punch, has some pretty good stuff out there, and then some of the user generated, like the other network users, they have some good stuff there, here and there. There's some people that try to add a little bit of a story here in the little time that they have with it. And there's others that just like kind of here, go blast bad guys. And
did you try the level editor at all? Did you add any content or?
Not yet. I haven't really gotten into that, but I've been meaning to. I just want to make sure I have some time to sit down and do that one day.
So what else have you been up to?
I've been playing SmackDown vs. Raw 2011 and just kind of creating new guys in the create a superstar mode.
So how have you found that?
If you've played the past ones, it's pretty deep as far as like getting the looks down and everything. And I know that like when I'm playing, even if I know what I want, it takes me a good hour just to get the look right. And then another hour just to get all the moves down. And then probably about 10-20 minutes just for the entrance. So it's like a whole 2.5 hours of try. Even if you know what you want, you're like okay, it's got to have these boots, but then you look through all the boots and then it's like, oh well, these boots look nice. Oh wait, no, these ones look better. Oh, I can change the color on this. Like, you just see a bunch of different ones and it's like, okay. And then that was the past ones. This year it's like it's ramped up in the create a superstar feature where everything you do, like everything you wear, could pretty much you could change the color on it. If you want to, you don't have to deal with a certain color. Like, I like that jacket, but it's got pink on it or something like that, and you don't want him to wear pink or something. As far as the gameplay goes, it's about average at best. I mean, there's still a lot of mechanical things that are just, you find yourself doing the same thing over and over again just to win a match.
Is it kind of a button masher?
I'd say so. It's a little bit of button mashing and then a little bit of like figuring out like running around and jumping off ropes and hitting the right buttons and everything. But it's still got a little bit of strategy to it, but at the same time it still kind of gets to the core of button mashing.
Now, is the series SmackDown versus Raw like that in general, or have there been any wrestling games that haven't been button mashers?
I haven't played anything too much outside of the SmackDown versus Raw, like anything outside of the PlayStation era stuff. So I don't know about the N64 or the like. I think they had No Mercy, or I forget what those ones were. Right, and most of those kind of play the same. I think they kind of changed. With the SmackDown versus Raw, they went from like the face buttons to the right trigger stick to do moves. So it takes a little time to get used to. But once you do, everything is there.
All right. So I'll talk a little bit about what I've been up to. Still playing a little bit of Shadows of the Damned, even though I did finish the story and I completed it on hard. Still loving the game, still think it's awesome. Everybody out there should definitely play that if they get a chance, especially since this game hasn't been selling that well.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, it doesn't have that many marketing dollars behind it, so it's kind of...
Even with EA behind it.
Huh.
Yeah, well, EA is behind it, but it's not... I think it's through the EA Partners site,
okay,
which is
a
little... Yeah, it's a little different, you know, since it's not a first-party EA-owned shop.
So they're not going to push it like Battlefield or anything?
Yeah, no. This is done by, you know, Suda51, who has his own outfit. So I've also been up to playing some Red Faction Armageddon. I just started it. I didn't really play all that much into it, so I will continue to play it and report back. But so far, so good. So far, it hasn't been that bad of a game at all.
Now, fill me in here, because I'm not familiar with what Red Faction Armageddon is.
Well, Red Faction is a sequel to Red Faction Guerrilla, which came out a couple of years ago. It's basically a third-person shooter kind of a game. The real premise behind it was that it had 100% completely destructible environments, so you could walk up to anything and blow it up.
So it's very interactive.
Oh, well, if you want to call it interactive, that's what it is, because you just run up to a wall and you just blow it up. Now, if you have trouble getting to an enemy, you can just dig a hole right to it. You know, it's very different. A lot of these games today don't have 100% completely destructible environments. You know, even Bad Company 2, which came close... Like, there were certain things that you just couldn't blow up. But with Red Faction, you could blow up everything.
Cool, man.
Which is a lot of fun, because they have these explosive barrels all over the place. So you can just shoot a barrel, and that'll start a chain reaction of blowing things up until you take down, like, an entire building. It's, like, insane.
Now, do you feel like things that sometimes maybe get a little too chaotic, or have you not hit that point yet?
Well, I could see how it could get chaotic. It gets especially difficult when you're trying to take cover because enemies can blow up everything too.
Right.
So I found with just the first mini boss, I'm trying to run around and he's just shooting at me, blowing everything up around me. So I have nowhere to take cover. And you have the ability to rebuild everything mm-hmm. that you destroy.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that it takes a while to rebuild it. You know, it takes a few more seconds to rebuild it than to destroy it. So he can blow things up faster than you can rebuild them.
I see.
So in instances like that, it gets pretty difficult. But overall, it's been fun. I mean, I've only played about an hour, but I intend on getting more into it.
Cool, man. Cool. So what else?
Been playing a little Earth Defense Force, Insect Armageddon. Playing a little bit, not a whole lot. It's one of those games that you really just have to play with somebody else.
More co-op than anything else?
Well, not even co-op, but just multiplayer, like playing all the waves, like their version of Horde mode. You know, you need people around to play it that makes the game fun. The story itself isn't really much of a story, and it's kind of boring. I would imagine if you were to play co-op, it would be more exciting, but it's hard to, you know, trod through that single player all by yourself. That's basically about that. I did touch a little bit of Fear 3, which, again, is a pretty good game, you know, especially if you like first-person shooters. This is definitely the game that you're going to enjoy the most, especially for Fear fans. You know, I think they would like it. I personally have only played the first Fear. I haven't played Fear 2. So the story is a little confusing for those that are just getting into it. But it's a good game. The shooting mechanics are pretty solid. And especially if you play it co-op, the other person has powers that are complementary to your partner's. So if you play it through co-op, you know, you'll be able to use teamwork to really, you know, breeze through levels and make it a lot easier on everybody.
Now, what do you feel the chief differences are between Fear 1 and Fear 3?
Well, like, it feels like almost everything.
Really?
They didn't... The main character, Point Man, is the same character from the first game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain level of familiarity, but a lot of the story stems off of Alma, which was introduced in Fear 2. So the story feels a lot different. It's also not as atmospheric as Fear was. You know, Fear was a lot scarier and a lot more tense and, you know, felt more like a survival horror that happened to have first-person shooting rather than just a military first-person shooter, which is kind of what Fear 3 feels like. So there are some differences, but... You know, if you're into first-person shooters, this is a solid one to hold you over till Battlefield 3.
Cool.
And lastly, I've been playing the DLC expansion for Fallout New Vegas, and that's been really good. Old World Blues is what it's called. Yeah, so I've been playing that. It's been a lot of fun. It gives you a lot of really good weapons to use, especially energy weapons for those people that happen to like energy weapons. But it's a solid story. It's really funny and it's good. It's really good.
Now, there were a lot of bugs in the main game itself. Have you run into any bugs in the DLC so far?
Well, the DLC runs off of the engine for the game.
Okay.
It's all off the Embryo engine. Mm-hmm. So... It's better than Fallout 3. I'll put it that way. Because Fallout 3, the bugs were just everywhere. And once you got past a certain point, the game almost became unplayable.
Oh, geez.
I mean, that's why I couldn't get 100% in Fallout 3. You know, I'm stuck at 92%. And I was just playing and everything was good. I was a really high level. But then I got to a point where it's like a crazy firefight. And the game just can't render all the graphics and everything at one time because it's just so bad, and the game just freezes and that's it. So I get like 2 minutes of playing and it freezes, so I can't go any further.
Ouch.
With Fallout New Vegas, it's better. I hesitate to say that it's gone, but I'll definitely say that it's better. I haven't run into any major hitches, and I'm in the low 20s for level wise on level cap of 30, so I'm pretty far in the game, and I've already beat Fallout New Vegas once, so I haven't had any hitches or any freezing or anything like that. So far, so good. You know, there are some slowdowns every once in a while, especially in times where you're really, you know, battling a lot of enemies, or there's a lot going on the screen, but overall, it's good. So, you know, if you got to pick up a Fallout right from the beginning, Fallout New Vegas isn't a bad choice. All right, so let's move on to our first segment, which is all about the Nintendo 3DS. We all saw last year at E3 that the 3DS was going to be the newest thing in game in handheld gaming. It was going to give you 3D with no glasses. And Nintendo had every expectation that this particular piece of hardware was going to do exactly what the Nintendo DS did earlier. And recent reports have come out that show the exact opposite. The 3DS is not selling very well at all. And in fact, it's doing so poorly that older systems are beating it out, including a few weeks where the PSP even beat it out. And that came out at least 5 years ago, if not more. You know, I come to think that the 3DS is on its last legs. So I wanted to get your reaction, Slacker. What is your reaction to these kinds of news? Do you think it's right? Do you think it's wrong?
Well, I mean, something that really caught my attention during there was a series of E3 press conferences, and at Nintendo's E3 press conference, the guy at the podium, I can't remember what his name was, but he said, games sell hardware, all right? You know, people buy systems for the games. It's not the other way around. You don't have an amazing piece of hardware and then just slap a few games on it. I mean, you know, really, people like the imagination. They want to have fun playing the games. I mean, while I do enjoy playing, you know, Dragon Quest, and there's a lot of, like, titles that have been ported to the DS, I really don't see any games that are blowing me out of the water. I mean, I'm kind of interested in the Kid Icarus title. I thought that was pretty cool. But, I mean, there's nothing that really stands out to me that says I have to play this. It's exclusive to the DS, and I absolutely have to buy it just so I can play it.
So you're not excited at all for the Mario games or any of the Zelda games?
Well, but, like, I mean, the Zelda games are all, they're all ports. I mean, you know, Ocarina of Time, I know they're porting Ocarina of Time. I don't know of any others, but... I mean, there's nothing original that's coming out for the 3DS itself, so it's kind of a bit of a buzzkill.
Well, then, okay, so then the Zelda games are out, but what about, like, the Mario games? I mean, they're planning Mario Kart, and I'm sure they'll have a generic Mario title as well somewhere along the line.
Well, yeah, somewhere along the line, but right now, I mean, you know, sales are lagging right now, and that's part of the reason why I think... that sales are lagging right now is because that unique title, that exclusive DS title, isn't there. And, you know, it doesn't really give, you know, anybody a compelling reason to buy the system because there's no exclusive title.
All right, so what about you, Jose? What's your core reaction to this news?
It kind of doesn't surprise me considering the fact that the Nintendo has 4 DSs out on the market today. They have the DS Lite that's still $100. The DSi, I think, is $150. The DS XL, which is, I think, $20 more. And then now you got the 3DS.
Yeah, I tend to agree with both of you, actually. I do think it's a combination of the fact that Nintendo got into the habit of releasing a piece of hardware every 2 years or year and a half, something like that.
Yeah, it feels like they didn't make enough distance where you kind of missed it, where you have a game in a series where somebody has a game in a series where they have 3 years in between and you look forward to that next game. This one, it was the DS a new DS every couple of years. And
well, I was going to say that, with the other DSs still on the market, I mean, you know, and the DS, the 3DS is priced pretty, it's pretty expensive. And I mean, with the other DS still on the market, that has to take away from, you know, the sales of the 3DS.
Right. I would think so. I mean, especially with the economy the way it is today, if somebody already has it, I mean, let's say a parent gave it to their kid. You know, the kid goes up to them and say, "Oh, I want the 3DS," and they'll say, "Well, you already have a DS. What's the difference between this? Oh, this is 3D, and you know, and it's another $100 for that. Where you as a parent would consider, you have to consider spending another $100 on something that they might already have.
And now, when you look at the sales numbers, I mean, it sort of further damages your case. I mean, you know, are you going to spend $300 on a system that, you know, with poor sales, how much longer is it going to be around? How much longer are they going to make titles for it?
I mean, it's either that or they could just kind of reboot a new DS where it's a 3DS XL or something like that, 3DS Lite, where they probably do that again, which Let's hope not.
I think it's time to just ditch the DS name altogether. I mean, it's they've released so many titles that, well, like so many pieces of hardware that it's almost become synonymous. I mean, what's the real big difference between the DS and the DSi? All right, you get the Nintendo Marketplace. But that's about it. Otherwise, it's the same exact piece of hardware. And what's the difference between the DSi XL and the DSi? Well, it's just bigger. That's all it is. And then what's the real difference between the DSi and the 3DS? Well, all it does is 3D, but that's all that it does. So I don't think that there's enough of a difference between pieces of hardware to really make a justification where you can say, all right, let's release a new piece of hardware, and this is going to sell like hotcakes. I mean, you know, you just keep harping on the same ground. Like, they're not breaking any ground anymore. You know, the DSi did that. The DSi broke the ground. There was a big jump between the Game Boy and the DSi, you know, the DS. So, of course, those are going to sell like crazy, and the numbers show that it did. You know, with 150 million units sold worldwide, it's a lot of units.
What would it take in a 3DS for you to want to buy it? What else would you need to see?
Well, personally, I think handhelds are done.
You think handhelds in general are done?
Yeah, I think they're completely done. I mean, look at what, like, iPad and iPhone and all the mobile platforms are doing with games. You know, I think that they're taking up the room that was left with handhelds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would you rather? It all comes down to stuff that we've been talking about forever. People want one device that's going to do everything. So if you're going to have a phone that also plays games, that also does everything else,
right?
Or you're going to carry around a Nintendo that will play games just as well.
But now, don't you feel like there's a stark difference between the games you get on, say, your phone or a tablet PC versus, you know, the games on, like, say a DS or a PS Vita?
Well, sure. At this point in time, there's a big difference. But, you know, the technology that's out now is getting a lot stronger. And you're starting to see full-fledged 3D-supported games on an iPad. You're able to play games like Infinity Blade, which are like full 3D-rendered games that makes good use of that touch mechanic. And I think that, with, you know, Sony was dabbling in the idea of having that PSP phone, which is like now the Xperia Play, but it's going to... They were trying to bridge that gap between handheld devices and mobile devices.
Jose, do you have any opinion on this?
Well, I think that the thing about it is, with the DS, is that I think all gamers would be willing to embrace new technology, but two things have to go with it. It has to work well, for one, and there has to be the games to support it. And if the games aren't there, like they are with the DS, the 3DS, then you aren't going to have that many people buying into it. There's not a game that's a system seller.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like with the PS Vita, I mean, even, you know, you see the new Uncharted coming out, and you're like, all right, like I would want to buy a PS Vita just to play the new Uncharted.
Yeah, I mean, just watching that at E3 just looked incredible.
Yeah.
The fighting game, Street Fighter versus Tekken or something like that, Street Fighter X Tekken, when they showed off Cole McGrath, I was like, wow, I want to play as Cole McGrath. I just want to buy one just for that, you know, just to have that kind of power with it.
Right. I've always felt like Sony was really good with the exclusive content. I mean, whether it be putting Kratos in God of War or Cole McGrath in Street Fighter, always really cool about creating a very, very unique gaming experience.
Yeah. But, I mean, going back to the original point, you know, this people really aren't embracing this 3D at all. You know, just looking at the numbers right now, the 3DS has sold 3.3 million units in its lifespan, which is just this year. But it, you know, for that's as many as it's ever sold, mm-hmm. And that's really weak.
Is that worldwide or?
Yes, worldwide.
Oh wow!
And that's less than what the PSP has sold worldwide this year, also.
Okay.
It's already, the PSP is already outpaced by 17,000 units.
Wow, that's surprising considering that Sony is pretty much phasing out the PSP.
Yeah, the PSP is done. There's no more PSPs coming out. And they've already stopped production of the PSP Go. So you can't even buy a PSP Go anymore. Well, whatever's out there now is what's out there. No new ones are being made. And just to give you a point of comparison, the PS2 sold about 1.5 million units, which is half of the sales of a 3DS. And the PS2 is 10 years old.
Right.
So
but,
it just goes.
But is that really a fair comparison? Because, you know, you've got a handheld system versus a home system.
Well, it's not it's not exactly apples to apples, but it also shows that the PS2 has super old technology as compared to today. It's old. It's outdated. The PS3 has been out, and even that's on the brink of getting, you know, outdated.
Well, still, with that, I think it's a fair comparison considering the price point. PS2 is $100, and the 3DS is $250.
Right.
And it's pretty much an investment of, do you want to put less money into a system that you could play more games on a bigger TV with better games, or do you want something that's just getting started?
Well, I think it just kind of goes back to, what is the 3DS really offering to people, and what do people really want to buy? And, you know, for how much?
Yeah.
And when you look, and, you know, you look at it, you can get a PS3 brand new right off the rack for $300, or an Xbox 360 right off the rack for $300, or you can buy a 3DS for $250. I mean, it's a lot of money. I think that they're way, way overpriced.
So what is the price point for you to be interested? What would it have to be priced at for you to say, okay, I'll give this a shot?
Well, for me personally, it would be $150.
$150?
Yeah, because it's not different enough for me to go out and replace the DS that I already have. You know, if they want to replace a DS that I already have, I'm willing to dabble in the $150 range. You know, maybe $160, but, you know, right around there. And I think a lot of people are at that point too. This was a whole new thing that people never seen before, that's going to have all these features that they've never had before on a Nintendo handheld, then that's a different story. But this is just a DS.
Right, with 3D.
With 3D. I mean, but that's it. And especially nowadays with, like, the internet going into everything, TVs even have internet access. And yet the 3DS is still sluggish with internet integration. It's almost insane. I mean, how do you even plan a piece of hardware now that doesn't have complete and total super easy internet integration?
I mean, it's keep with the times.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way that I could see this surviving at all. So this is going to bring us to our first break. So stay tuned and we will be back shortly. And we're back. So that's going to bring us to our next segment, which will also be the last segment, but it's a big one, so I think it's worth it. But let's talk about Comic-Con. Everybody knows Comic-Con. It's been around for a while, and it's kind of evolved into a half comic book, half movies, half video games, half everything else.
It's pop culture.
Yeah, it's con. Just, yeah, it's certainly just been a it just evolved into this culmination of pop in general. So we've been seeing a ton of announcements, everything from movies to video games to everything in between. So I think we should take a few moments and kind of hit the highlights. So why don't you start us off, Jose? What is some of the highlights of the show for you so far?
Personally, non-game related, my favorite thing coming out of it was CM Punk invading the WWE panel. It might have been scripted because he just got fired. His last show was in I think last Sunday at his own hometown of Chicago, where he won the title, and so he's fired. He doesn't have a job anymore. So he goes into San Diego. Goes into the WWE panel, starts questioning Triple H, who's, if anybody's been keeping up, is a new Vince McMahon now, and just starts questioning him and saying, how's life in fantasy land, Hunter? And Triple H goes, well, how's life in the unemployment line? And they kind of go back and forth, and then it ultimately ends in, look, Punk, if you want to come back, you know, you could just call us. Punk leaves. Right before leaving, he says, well, Stephanie, your wife, has my number. And everybody starts chanting his name, and he walks out. And I just thought, wow, that was great right there.
Yeah, who would have thought something coming out of the WWE scripted?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who knew?
No, never.
Ever? Is it still fake, or is it still real?
Wait, wrestling's fake? Wait, what?
That's
the what else has gotten you excited?
I would have to say some of the stuff that I've seen out of the Avengers movie, they officially, released some of the posters for it and some of the images, like the Captain America suit and how the Hulk in a poster and everything, which was pretty nice. And The Walking Dead, which I can't get enough of. I've only seen like 4 episodes of it, but I'm trying to look for it on a DVD somewhere, and everybody's sold out everywhere, so I'm trying to look all over for it.
Yeah, The Walking Dead thing is pretty big. I have all the episodes myself. I just haven't watched them all yet, but I hear a lot of good things about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not so much about the zombies as it is about the interaction of survival, like with the people trying to get together to survive the zombie apocalypse, and how it's character driven more than it is like zombie driven.
And they're actually, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're making a game out of it too for PS3 and Xbox.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're definitely going to be releasing one of those games based on the universe, not so much the characters that you already know, but it's going to take place in a Walking Dead universe.
I saw a couple of screenshots of it, and I really enjoyed the art style of it. It's got like a very comic book type feel, sort of like Borderlands, like when you play through Borderlands, how it kind of has like an animated feel to it. So, it looks really good, really interesting.
Yeah, it's being done by Telltale Games, which is a big point and click adventure company, or at least used to be. So we'll see what comes out of it, but it should be pretty interesting if nothing else. So what else has tickled your fancy?
See, Beavis and Butthead's coming back, which... Yeah. I, there's a very simple part of my mind that's really excited about that, and when I saw the little trailer thing, I just laughed. It just brought me back to that little place about 10-15 years ago, just trying to watch this thing. And
it kind of made me want to light something on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that was a big show for MTV. I mean, they banked a lot of money off that. That's for sure. And
I kind of like now how they're making fun of the other MTV shows instead of like bad music videos. It's like other MTV shows that they might be doing. Like, yeah, they showed them making fun of Jersey Shore, and I was just rolling. I'm like, oh wow, I can't believe if they do this on MTV, this is insane.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely seems like they're willing to poke fun of themselves a little bit, which is pretty good. I mean, considering the Jersey Shore is just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, well, they have to make fun of the Jersey Shore. I mean, MTV's got to get back. Yeah, MTV's got to get back on top. That's the only way they're going to do it. And I remember that Mike Judge was saying that MTV wanted him to make a sequel to the movie.
Oh, yeah?
Beavis and Butthead Do America. They wanted him to make a sequel to that. And
so
then
why
he
did
said,
he do it?
Well, he said, how about I just do a show? You know, how about I just continue the show?
Oh.
And then they said, okay, even better. So that's how the whole thing came about. But I thought it was pretty interesting that there was enough, there was enough interest even today to bring back a show like that.
I think Judge said it himself, where he said that 15-year-old adolescent stupid boys are just a universal comedy.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
Pretty true.
So, what else has been going on with you? What's getting yourself excited?
Well, in particular, I was pretty excited about the Robert Rodriguez films. And so I was going to make a couple Machete sequels, and we're going to get a sequel to Sin City. And, in particular, Comic-Con for me was mostly about just the art styles. I mean, I'm a big fan of Robert Rodriguez, the way he did Sin City. I really enjoyed the art style, the way that film was captured, and The Walking Dead really did catch my attention. I am very interested to see how the game pans out.
Yeah, I mean, definitely to see a Machete sequel is pretty interesting, especially since Machete originally came about because it was a fake film trailer for Grindhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So in Grindhouse, they said, oh, we need to make a couple of fake movie trailers to make this seem like it's a old-fashioned double feature.
Mm-hmm.
So they just threw this thing together to make a 30-second movie trailer. And enough people got excited about it that they made a real movie about it. And once they make the real movie, enough people said, hey, this is awesome, we need more, and now they're making a sequel to it. It's like crazy.
Yeah, it's the whole thing spawned off of what? Like, you know, just a quick trailer, I mean.
Yeah, off of a joke.
Well, at the end of the movie of the original Machete, it said Machete returns and Machete kills and again and Machete kills again. So I think they kind of planned it out, but they didn't really know the official future of it yet until this weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure they left the door open, so you never want to shut the door completely in case somebody really wants a piece of that.
Especially nowadays, I mean, everything has sequels. And forget sequels. I mean, like, we're talking, like, 3, 4, maybe even, like, 5.
Yeah. You got a trilogy and then a second trilogy. To...
Yeah, the thing that worries me about Sin City, though, is it's been a while since it came out.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are definitely titles that get stale. I mean, like, I didn't like when they did the new Terminator, T3, how many years after they did T2. Like, it just, you know, it didn't fit. Like, it kind of got a little stale. I was a little disappointed with T3.
The third Terminator or the Terminator Salvation?
A little bit with both, yes, but in particular T3.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, one was bad, and the other one was just, oh, wow, that was, ugh.
Yeah.
And now Arnold wants to buy the rights to the Terminator series so he can make more movies himself.
Well, he's got to pay for his divorce somehow, right?
I guess so.
And his love child.
Right, so
Arnold. Go ahead.
So let's focus in a little bit on the video game aspects of Comic-Con. You know, since we're on the movie trail, let's talk about some of the game-related movies that were released. In particular, the Mass Effect movie. Anybody have any opinions on that?
I'm kind of curious on how they would pull that off, considering that I haven't really played the game, but I hear you could choose the gender of the main character. So, I mean, I wonder if they're going to have, like, a male version of the main character or if they're going to have a female version of the main character and if that would divide anybody.
Well, I know that was a big thing when it came out, to be able to choose whether you're male or female, since the story itself is fairly generic, and any parts that would be gender-sensitive would be up to the player's control. So, you know, when you get back to your ship after doing a mission, you know, then you could act out whatever you want to do within the confines of your own gender. So you can, like, hit on guys and... You know, do whatever you wanted to do that way. But, you know, once you get to the mission part of it, it's fairly generic.
So really it sounds like picking the gender of your character doesn't influence the main outcome of the story too much in one way or the other.
It doesn't at all. The game plays out exactly the same. It's just, how, you know, how you want your action figure to look.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it affects who you can have relationships with. With Mass Effect 2, if you're a girl, you can't hit on another girl. So there's only opposite sex relations. So that that's really the only difference between playing, you know, male Shepard and female Shepard. And, you know, the voice actor is different also, but as far as gameplay elements are concerned, it's exactly the same. But I thought it was interesting that they were going to make a movie out of this, because you could really, in the game itself, you can choose to say or, you know, do whatever you want to do. I mean, it's an open world RPG in the fact that you can literally do anything you want to do. Go anywhere you want to go, kill anybody you want to kill.
So do you think this will translate well to a movie, or...?
Well, I think it depends on how they're going to go about it. I mean, if they're going to follow one of the main storylines, I think it would get kind of dicey. But if they were to be inspired by the universe and kind of do something in the universe of Mass Effect, that would turn out to be much better.
Sort of like its own separate story? Or
yeah, like have a separate story or even a story that's influenced by the actual events, but not have it play out exactly the same. Because, you know, we know that most video game movies aren't good at all.
Right.
And only recently did a video game movie do even a little bit of justice to the actual game. Because, you know, I think Prince of Persia was okay. But there hasn't been, like, any the best video game movies ever.
Yeah, that's true. None of them really come to mind. Although Resident Evil was decent.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was mostly inspired. It was in the spirit of the game rather than being way too exact, which I think is kind of a good thing anyway. I mean, if you played through the game and then the movie was just sort of a film adaptation of the game, I think that'd be kind of boring.
Well, see, I would rather that the films kind of, like, films kind of fill in the gaps that video games leave themselves. You know, I really liked what they did with Dead Space, how they have, they released two animated movies that are in the Dead Space universe that kind of explain events from a different perspective. So you don't have to work within the confines of a story that people already love and go to die over. And it prevents a lot of, you know, expectations. So, because, I mean, most people, when they say, oh, like, they're going to make an Uncharted movie, right? And this thing has been going on forever, and people love Uncharted. So if you're going to make a movie based on an Uncharted video game, there's a lot of expectations to live up to.
Right.
But if you're going to, but I think if you do it through the eyes of a different person, that might make a lot more interesting of a game. Like, for those, like, who are in Uncharted 2, like, if you were to play as the villain and, you know, kind of see what the villain has been up to, or Chloe, like the secondary character, and, you know, get a little bit of her backstory or how she fits into things. It would add more to the universe and be a better movie altogether. Do you agree with that or no?
I think that, yeah, I mean, because it's something unique. I mean, as long as I just don't like getting the film adaptation of the game where it's like, it just, like, they try and fit the game story in the movie. I think that, you know, like, yeah, like going an origins route where you explain, you know, the origins of perhaps another character, or maybe go as use it as a way to explain between games. I mean, I'm fine with that. I think that's pretty cool. But just trying to fit the game into a movie, just I don't like.
I mean, it adds a little bit more to the characters themselves. Like, you'll see a character, what they go through and how they struggle to be what they are, or how they came to, like, how they met each other and everything, and that how they know each other exactly.
Yeah, no, I you know, like I said, I really liked what the Dead Space animated movies did for the universe, you know, since they kind of, you know, one of them talked about the finding of the marker. You know, that was like the object of the whole of Dead Space 1, was to get to this marker and learn more about it. So this, the movie itself talked about when they originally found the marker on the planet surface, and they kind of gave you like a whole backstory of the marker and the politics behind it and the whole thing. And then if you go back and play the game, you kind of understand more about what's going on, and it makes the game better, and it makes the movie better too. And I think a lot of the, you know, the movies nowadays kind of miss that completely. They try to retell the story through somebody else's interpretation, which chances are they're not going to like, because they already liked the first interpretation in the video game.
Right. And I think it's a little bit harder to make a game, or not a game based off, but the movie based off the game, considering that there is a lot more material in a game, that there is, like, somewhere between 8 and some 50 hours of material there that you kind of go through to condense that down to maybe an hour and a half or to 2 hours of a movie is a little hard on its own, because you're going to be cutting out some key parts from that game that people really liked.
Right. The movie format, it's not an exact translation. The movie format, like, you basically have to keep people entertained for 2 to 2.5 hours. Anything longer than that, people start to tune out. So, you know, you're kind of limited in certain regards.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely agree. So let's switch gears a little and talk about the Freddy Krueger announcement in Mortal Kombat.
Oh, boy.
So go ahead, I'll say.
That's when I saw that trailer. I had to show my brother immediately, because, one, he's a big Mortal Kombat fan, and, two, he's a big horror movie fan. So when I showed him, the first thing he said to me was, why does he have two claws? I punch him in the arm like, it's Mortal Kombat Freddy Krueger in the same game. Don't you care about this? And he's like, yeah, that does look pretty cool, considering the, I think they showed like part of the fatality that he has, like with the big heater or the oven thing where he shoves him in the oven.
He's packed you down to hell or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool and really an interesting way to introduce a new character that people are really going to care about.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know if I could tell you who the other three DLC characters were.
Well, the other three DLCs were Scarlet, Kenshi, and Rain. And of note, I mean, Scarlet character, because basically there was, because Mortal Kombat, what Mortal Kombat is famed for is the palette swapping. So you have, you know, you change Scorpion's outfit to blue and you get Sub-Zero, change it to green, you get Reptile, so on and so forth.
Right.
And so the whole origin of Scarlet was that, you know, there was a glitch with, I think, Milena, and so that changed her outfit to red, and then so people thought it was actually a new character, when in fact it was just a glitch in the game.
Yeah, but I mean, to create a whole character out of that
just right.
seems like they're stretching it a little bit.
Not true.
But I mean, even in the spirit of what I was originally saying, it's like, okay, so, you know, it's a color palette swap for one, and the other people, whatever. But, you know, Freddy Krueger, come on. I mean, none of them all together don't even equal the infamy that Freddy Krueger has on his own.
Yeah, he's iconic.
Yeah, so, I mean, and it fits so well. Like, it's one of those things that when it happens, you're like, wow, that makes so much sense. I can't believe they didn't do that before.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. I'd kind of like to see Jason in there too, man. So you could finally, like, answer that question. You know, when all those, like, Friday the 13th movies were coming out and all the
Well, they had that one movie, but, you know, I don't know if that did too well. But you could finally settle the score on Freddy's behalf, or because I think he lost that one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think Jason beheaded him. And then, and he walked off with his head into the not the sunset, but I guess he just walked off with his head at the end of the movie. But no, I mean, but on another level, I think it'd be kind of cool to control that, like where you could kind of have your very own personal Freddy versus Jason like death match.
Yeah, especially in the Mortal Kombat universe.
Right, right.
Which just fits that horror genre so well.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I even recall a interview that Stig Asmussen, the creative and general director of God of War 3, just said, like, this is a match made in heaven. Like, I can't believe that Kratos wasn't, you know, in this from the beginning. Just because, like, the two universes just meshed so well. And, you know, just the way that Kratos is just makes him a perfect fit for Mortal Kombat.
Right, right.
And this, again, just seems like it was just meant to be. Like, how this never happened before is beyond me. And I think it opens the door for a lot of other horror characters to get involved. I mean, who wouldn't want to go out and buy Hellraiser if they put it out for him?
That have a, freaked, you know, me out, man.
Yeah, get a Hellraiser versus Freddy Krueger match in Mortal Kombat. I mean, that's pretty exciting.
Right.
I'm excited. I'm excited for the Kratos versus Freddy Krueger match. I cannot wait to play that. But
yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they're going to sell a ton.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just based off word of mouth, like, oh, hey, Freddy Krueger's in the game now. Like, really? I want to get this game now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So continuing with the fighting genres, Marvel vs. Capcom got a whole bunch of characters released for their new Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 game. So, I mean, we're talking another 16 characters, something like that?
Yeah.
12 characters?
12 characters.
12. It's 12. Yeah. It's 12.
Yeah. 12 characters.
6 Marvel, 6 Capcom. There's 8 new stages. There's a new mode in for online. Now you could be a spectator and just kind of sit back and watch two people go at it instead of having to be a part of the action yourself.
Well, so that's kind of cool. I mean, I think that it might be a good way to pick up a couple combos, a move or two.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but a lot of people are kind of, I don't want to say up in arms, but they're awfully chatty about the fact that they're not happy that this is being released on another disc.
Well, yeah.
Or that it is, is being released on another disc.
I don't know as far as technical aspects of DLC, like if they plan it out ahead of time or if they had this planned out, then yeah, I would be a little more upset about it as far as like if they wanted the new characters, I'd be upset that this wasn't DLC, but if they couldn't fit it in, like, into the disc, into Marvel vs. Capcom 3, then I could kind of understand that a little bit more.
Well, I can almost guarantee that this particular update has been planned from day one. I'm sure all these characters were planned from the beginning, and that they just left them out intentionally.
But even with these characters, it seems like there's still a bit of an outcry over this selection. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that were clamoring for Venom to be included in this one. He's not. So I think that there's some people are upset over the characters themselves.
Well, I mean, take a look at what you are getting.
We're getting
You get a Ghost Rider. I think you get Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I got the list. Hawkeye, for Marvel, it's Hawkeye, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange, Iron Fist, Rocket Raccoon, and Nova. Capcom gets Firebrand, Strider, Hiryu, Phoenix Wright, Virgil, Nemesis, and Frank West.
So I know people were upset that they didn't get Frank West, so they're going to get him now. I know people were saying how cool it would have been if Phoenix Wright was in the game, and now he's in the game.
I'm just kind of curious on how they would work that. I mean, does he have a special where he goes, objection, and then it'll just...
I bet you that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, but I mean, I know that there's still, like, missing a lot of the characters that people, you know, grow to love. I think they were missing Cyclops, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's still not in there, and
I showed a friend of mine the Marvel vs. Capcom 3. I brought it over. He's like, oh, the first thing he has is Cyclops in it? And I was like, no. He kind of like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think that Capcom looks at it and says, well, all right, you're not getting Cyclops, but you're getting, you know, all these other random characters that nobody asked for. You know, it just doesn't even feel like...
Personally, I would rather see Cyclops than, like, some of the... I don't even know anything about Rocket Raccoon that much, you know? I don't know too much about Nova.
Yeah, I mean, even Hawkeye, even the bigger names, like, are people really itching to play Hawkeye as much as they are itching to play Venom or Cyclops? I doubt it.
Yeah, who's Hawkeye? Yeah, I mean, he's one of the Avengers, but he's not as big as Venom or Cyclops. I mean, I guess that was my point.
Especially considering that they were in the first two. So if you're in the first two games, they should make it to the third, and they just don't.
They
so,
might have a plan for DLC if they do have that. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to wait till the DLC for that comes out, where they'll charge an arm and a leg for that too.
Or that'll just be Ultimate Capcom for Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom 3 Tournament Edition.
Yeah.
How many adjectives can we throw on this before it just gets too much?
Well, so they did with Street
Marvel versus Capcom 3 Part 2. Like, what? This is the second part in our trilogy of Marvel versus Capcom 3.
So do you think it is like a money grab for Marvel? I mean, not for Marvel, for Capcom?
They always seem like it, considering that they have three different Street Fighter 4s now. It just seems, it feels like it now. I mean, it's one thing if you can't fit it all into one game, but if you make a whole new game with the same characters from the first game and then adding 12 more guys and then new stages, then it seems like, okay, well, you wanted $60 for the original. Now you want $40 for this one. So I'm spending $100 on two games.
Right. Although I think the shift from the original Street Fighter 4 to Super Street Fighter 4 was a lot. There was a bigger shift from Street Fighter 4 to Super Street Fighter 4 than there was from Super Street Fighter 4 to Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. I mean, all you're getting is four new characters in Arcade Edition. And at that, I mean, like, okay, so I think you've got, like, Evil Ryu, and then there's, like, one other guy of interest. But then, I mean, that's basically it. Like, the other two guys are, like, you know, a couple skateboarders or something. And you're, like you know, it's kind of a weird throw-in where you're just like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I definitely think that there was a bigger jump from 4 to Super 4, you know, than there will be from Super 4 to Super 4, you know, Arcade Edition. I mean, even with the reduced price, I still don't think that it just comes off bad. I mean, I know if you add up all the DLC individually, it comes out to more than what they're asking for the retail disc version is.
This came out last year, right? The original Marvel vs. Capcom 3?
Yeah, it came out late 2010, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, not even a year turnaround, and you're already asking for more money out of a new game.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have justified it. They said, all right, if you charge, if you were to do it all as DLC, you would get $3 a character or something like that, or, you know, $4 a character, and there's 12 characters. So right there, it's either $36 or $48. So you're getting, you know, for the money you'd laid down, you're already getting all those characters and value, plus the new mode, plus a couple of stages, and, you know, you get your money's worth right there. So it's kind of like equal value. So I could see that point of that part of it. But it's also the fact that they left all these characters off the disc to begin with, and they should have just added them to begin with. This, you know, Ultimate should have just been regular. But I mean, I guess it all depends on how big of a fan you are and at what point you came in on to the series at.
I don't know. I've kind of taken to the habit of waiting, and you know, for when most new games come out, because I just feel like there's always something planned. They always got something else that they're going to throw in, and I've taken into the habit of just waiting to buy games just to see what else they come out with.
Or even just that. I mean, games drop so quickly in price, it almost doesn't pay to buy them new.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or at least the release week.
I think the Infamous 2 Collector's Edition is now on sale for $60 at GameStop.
Yeah, so you wait a couple of months and now you can get the Collector's Edition for the regular price.
Oh, that burns me up a little, considering I spent $100 on it.
Yeah, that's these guys, man.
That's the problem. That's why, you know, nobody wants to buy games when they come out, because you get burned. You ultimately get burned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all like cars, too, because once you drive them off the lot, they decrease in value.
All right, so let's wrap up the conversation with talking about Batman Arkham City. Yeah, this has got to be one of the bigger games that's going to be released. And they just came out with Penguin, Solomon Grundy, and Talia al Ghul. So what do you think about that? You saw the trailers.
Well, I think they announced Talia al Ghul, but they haven't said to what capacity she's going to be in the game. They said she is going to be in the game. She might have they said something about a Persian, Greek accent type thing in the game. But watching the Penguin trailer with Solomon Grundy at the end, that was amazing. Just because, I mean, I think a few months ago when they had like that fake newspaper or something like that, or that interview that the Penguin was going to be in the game, they show Penguin. I'm like, okay, well, this is how he's going to be used. And then they show Grundy at the end. I was like, wow, now I want to play this more now.
Yeah, see, I find things particularly interesting because we have two different interpretations of the Batman universe going on at kind of the same time, because you have, you know, Batman Arkham City on the video game front kind of reinventing Batman as we know it, and then you have Christopher Nolan coming out with The Dark Knight Rising next year. So you have like these two different interpretations of the same character kind of rolling around. I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anytime you get different takes on the same character, it's always interesting to see like the little nuances that kind of go into each one. And one thing in particular that I enjoy about, you know, you mentioned The Dark Knight Rises. I think that Christian Bale is probably the best Bruce Wayne that I've seen really in any Batman series. I think he does Bruce Wayne better than anybody. Like, he's like, you know, the playboy millionaire that, you know, parties with models. I mean, like, you know, it looks, you know, he's really good. I really enjoy Christian Bale in the Batman series.
Yeah, well, I think if you look at Christian Bale as a whole, as far as the Batman universe is concerned, I'd say he's probably the best. I mean, I know a lot of people get on him because he does the voice of Batman all, you know, gargly and goes a little overboard with that. But come on, who does it better?
Right. I think it's become a running gag sometimes where, especially at my house, my brother will just come up to me at random points. One of my brothers, he'll just come up to me at random points and say, "I don't wear hockey pants." And just like, yeah, you know, it's a little over the top, but I mean, it's still, but at the same time, it's Batman. It's a guy that dresses up as a bat fighting crime. How seriously can you take that?
Yeah, well, even so, I don't think it's a bad interpretation. I think it kind of fits the universe, too. I mean, look at how Heath Ledger was doing the Joker.
Right.
That was really good, man.
Yeah, it was good, and he was doing a similar voice, you know? Especially when he was getting into the fight scene with Batman. He's like, come on, hit me. I mean, that was just as bad, no?
I don't know, but like maybe you kind of expect it from the Joker a little more, because the Joker is like, the Joker doesn't have like a normal alter ego. Like, Batman is Bruce Wayne, and so like, you know, oh hey, I'm Bruce Wayne, like I'm at a dinner party, I'm hanging out, whatever. But then the Joker, you just kind of expect to be crazy. So like the cackle, the, you know, screaming, the laughing, it all kind of fits a little better.
All right, so that's going to bring us to the end of our program today. Again, we would like to thank our guests, Jose, for coming on.
Thank you.
Of course. So make sure to go to our Twitter page at New Gamer Nation and like us, or go to our webpage at www.newgamernation.com, or go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/newgamernations. Again, thanks to everybody for coming on. Thanks to everybody for listening. We hope you enjoyed, and we'll be talking to you soon.